This podcast is created on the current and traditional territories of the peoples of the Treaty 7 region, which includes the Blackfoot Confederacy, comprised of the Siksika, the Piikani, and the Kainai First Nations, the Tsuut'ina First Nation, and the Stoney Nakoda, including Chiniki, Bearspaw, and Goodstoney First Nations. The city of Calgary is also home to the Métis Nation of Alberta, Districts 5 and 6. Traditional knowledge systems and approaches to understanding our world have sustained communities for thousands of years. As we explore new technologies and ways of knowing through AI, we recognize the importance of diverse perspectives and the wisdom embedded in established knowledge systems that have long preceded any digital innovations. Welcome to AI Rounds, a podcast designed specifically for faculty navigating the evolving landscape of artificial intelligence in healthcare, research, and education. I'm your host, Dr. Jesslyn Holodinsky, a data scientist from the Department of Emergency Medicine and Director of AI and Data, Education and Ethics in the Office of Faculty Development at the Cumming School of Medicine. Each episode, we'll break down complex AI concepts into digestible insights, explore practical applications in clinical and classroom settings, and discuss how these technologies are reshaping medical education and practice. Whether you're AI curious or looking to deepen your understanding, think of this podcast as your grand rounds for artificial intelligence, where we will examine, learn, and grow together. Welcome back to AI Rounds. Today we're exploring how medical educators can weather waves of technology change while preserving what makes teaching and learning fundamentally human. And thankfully, we do not have to have this conversation alone. Today, I have a guest. I have with me Dr. Darcy Norman, who's the Associate Director of Learning Technologies and Design at the University of Calgary's Taylor Institute for Teaching and Learning. Darcy brings a wealth of knowledge to our conversation today, combining over three decades of hands-on experience with educational technology alongside rigorous academic research into how technology shapes teaching and learning. Darcy's career journey reflects the evolution of educational technology itself. Darcy began as a web and multimedia developer, where he built some of the first online courses in the Faculty of Nursing at U of C. And I recently learned that Darcy's been podcasting since 2005, so he also might be some of the first podcasters at U of C as well. From there, he transitioned into educational technology consulting, focusing on how technology can enhance rather than replace human connection in education. Academically, Darcy holds a fascinating combination of degrees, which I'd love to learn a little bit more about, including a Bachelor's of Science in Zoology, and then a Bachelor of Education, Master's in Educational Technology, and most recently a PhD in Computational Media Design. His doctoral research explored something particularly relevant to our discussion today, which is how the design principles we use for video games can help us better understand and improve teaching and learning environments. But really why I wanted to talk to Darcy today was that recently he published a really insightful piece about experiencing these multiple waves of technology disruption throughout his career, right from computers through to today's Gen AI surge, and I want to dig in further. So Darcy, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you. Great to be here.
So for our listeners who might be feeling overwhelmed right now by the current AI surge, can you try to put this moment into some context for them, kind of based on your three decades of experience with educational tech change?
Yeah, I mean, I can try. And one of the things that I've noticed about the AI surge, this thing that we're in, it feels way more urgent and emergency than it might actually be, because we're in the middle of it, right? It's an acute, urgent thing that we're in. We're living it. And what we've seen over the last many years, like I started doing educational technology in 1995. So that was as the Mosaic web browser, the web was just being launched, and that changed everything. And it felt like that back then. This changes everything. We have to rethink everything. We got through it. And looking back, it was actually, we were okay. Yes, mm-hmm. It felt urgent at the time. We got through it. We're okay. And then as the web and social media all blew up, that felt like an urgent thing too. We have to rethink everything in the age of social media, web 2.0. And again, with the value of hindsight, it's like, oh, yes, that was interesting. There was good things we learned and we got through it because we worked through it together. This is another one of those things where it feels urgent and everything's changing. It kind of is because we're in the middle of it and we're just trying to make sense of it. And that's where it feels maybe more dire than it might be. And I think give it a few years and we're going to see some of the good things that come out of it. I think we're going to jettison some things, let go of some of the things that we're experimenting with, the companies are trying to push at us. And it will be, I think some parts of it will be continued. And then the next wave will come, whatever that will be.
So we've seen this pattern of, you know, something new comes, we're in it, it feels dire, it feels urgent. But looking back, maybe not so urgent, not so crazy as we thought. So what advice would you give to someone who's feeling that urgency right now of I don't know what to do, things need to change? What's the value of hindsight going to tell us?
I think the biggest thing is don't be scared of the technology. Like, it's being pushed at it as it's an existential threat. You have to understand it or you're out of a job, jobs being replaced by AI, et cetera. So it's know that it's not necessarily that. Don't be afraid of it, explore it. The other one is you're not in it alone. You have people you can work with, your colleagues, service units, like ours at the Taylor Institute. We're all in it together and we can figure it out together and make sense of it. And I think those two together, don't be scared, try it. You're not going to break things. But you have to understand what's going on. And the only way you get that is by putting in some time actually exploring it in your context. You can't like read an article about AI and all of a sudden understand this is what it means for medicine, teaching medicine. You've actually got to spend some time playing with AI, building things in that you would use. And maybe using it to help design a course, just sort of trying it out as a tool to support what you're doing. And then as you have that sort of time with it, you're developing some muscles to make sense of it. And then that's what you can use going forward.
Awesome. I like that sentiment of we're all in it together. And I often say, and I borrowed this from Sarah Eaton, that we're all first generation AI users right now. Like, we're all figuring it out together. So you've mentioned the Taylor Institute. Maybe for any listeners that aren't familiar, can you tell us what's going on at the Taylor Institute and what supports might be available to our faculty that are, you know, going through this and thinking, geez, I wish I had some help.
and know that, I mean, we're there. I mean, our mandate at the Taylor Institute is really to support instructors across all faculties at the University of Calgary. And that includes faculty members, sessionals, grad students, postdoctoral scholars. And really our role is to help support effective teaching, innovation in teaching and learning, understanding how do we enhance the student experience and student engagement. We have a number of groups in the TI. One looks at sort of the research, the scholarship of teaching and learning. We have a group that, so my team, the Learning Technologies and Design team, we help to administer the platforms, and Copilot as one of our AI platforms. We help to work with that as well. But we run Brightspace, we run Zoom, UGen, and those platforms. And we have a team of instructional designers, course designers, who can sit down with you and think about, well, what are you trying to accomplish in your course, and what types of assessments and learning activities, how do you actually design and implement these courses? And we have faculty members, educational development consultants, that can look at the curriculum level. So how do you design programs and courses at the high level so they all mesh and work build together?
So, I mean, that's a great pile of resources, and I would really encourage our faculty members and instructors to check that out. Something you said earlier that I want to bring back that I find maybe calming for a faculty member listening to this is you said, we're not going to be replaced by AI. And I believe that as well. But I do think we've got to work AI into our workflow, especially as we think about trying to graduate students that have a level of AI literacy that will be required for the workforce, whatever that may be. So if we're not going to be replaced by AI, and you know, if student learning hopefully is going to be enhanced by AI, how do we kind of embrace this intentionally, or maybe design our courses intentionally to include AI, or our assessments intentionally to include AI?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff going on there, obviously. Like, one of the things I keep in mind, so Steve Jobs, who was one of the co-founders of Apple back in the day, had a phrase describing personal computers as being a bicycle for the mind. And he was getting at bicycle is one of the most efficient machines devised, and it amplifies what you do so you can go further, faster, with more endurance. But it's something that's active. And Jacob Nielsen, who was one of the sort of founders of the field of usability, wrote a really great Substack article about AI is kind of like the forklift for the mind. And yes, you can do things, but it's kind of, you're not building muscles by doing it. It's like someone else, and I forget who, it might've been Ethan Mullock was saying, it's like taking a forklift to the gym. It's the more efficient way to do it. You can move more, but you don't build any capacity.
Okay. Right?
So it's having that sense of using it more as a bicycle than a forklift. And one of the shifts that we're seeing, so the University of Calgary just announced some or released some new assessment design principles. How do we as a university want to approach assessment? And a lot of them are really looking at how do we authentically assess what we're trying to teach? And so if your course is literally about how do you construct a paragraph, well, a large language model kind of blows that apart, mm-hmm. right? It's doing that for you. It's the forklift. If you're teaching a course on video game design, there was a great example of this a couple of years ago. Patrick Finn and Owen Brierley co-taught a course on a drama course on video game production. 1 week over block week. When the course was taught previously over a whole semester, the students would sort of by the end have an idea of a game, maybe a quick prototype and some thumbnail sketches. In this 1 week, they decided we're going all in on AI. You will use AI as much as you want. Use it for any part of this. Just document how you're using it. And what they found is by the end of the first day, people had playable games. They were using AI to create scripts, to write storyboards, to write the actual code for this. By the end, they had fully playable games that could probably be sold. They had marketing websites set up. They had business plans. And so that was more the bicycle approach, mm-hmm. right? So they go further, faster, with more endurance. But they're doing the work. Yes, the AI is kind of doing some of the stuff that's around the edges of what the course is. The course isn't literally how do you create the 8-bit sprite for the game. If an AI can do that, cool. How do you conceptualize a game so that it's fun? There's a lot more work that goes into that side of things, and AI can't do that. AI can sort of help with the busy work. It's good at busy work. Mm-hmm. It's good at work that you, the parts of the work that you care less about.
Right.
How that connects back to these assessment principles and authentic assessment is if, unless you're literally assessing, can you write a paragraph? Do you ban generative AI in those? If it's something else, what is a better way? Like say you're teaching, say in medicine, how to interview a patient. Mm-hmm. Right. So they're probably not writing an essay about interviewing a patient. They might be. I don't know. I haven't taught medicine. I would anticipate it's more scenario based. It's maybe performance. It's there's role playing involved and that kind of thing. And AI can help support that, right? It can give a practice partner for a student to actually interview, or mm-hmm. it can interview you as a student, as a patient. So all these tools can serve those ways. So it lets you do the more authentic assessment rather than are you essentially cosplaying a large language model? Are you generating text?
Right.
If the course is about generating text, cool. If it's not, there might be more effective, more authentic, more meaningful ways to assess what you're trying to get at with the course.
Yeah. Kind of the thread that I've picked up through that conversation really isn't AI related at all.
No.
Because we should want to authentically assess students without AI playing into the mix, right? And maybe this is an opportunity to have a little bit of a conversation about what authentic assessment truly is for our listeners. But don't we want to assess authentically anyways? And maybe is AI just, you know, this moment in time that's pushing us in that direction?
I think so. So a good friend of mine, Jim Groom, writes a lot about sort of technology and digital literacy and that kind of thing. And he talks, his background is actually film critics. So he went to a school at UCLA. He's like in that culture. He talks a lot about the MacGuffin. So if you watch a movie and there's like somebody carrying the suitcase, it's a plot device to move the plot along. The plot revolves around what's in the suitcase.
Right.
Doesn't matter, but it's that. And I think AI is one of those MacGuffins. It's not really about AI, but it's moving the plot along. It's giving us a reason to talk to people. It's giving people a reason to talk to each other and to try new things. I think you're exactly right. The goal should be authentic assessment anyway. What we've seen, non-authentic, less authentic assessment might scale better.
Sure.
Right? So you're doing a multiple choice test with 300 students. That's what I can do. I can't do performance-based, project-based learning with 300 students
for
with
sure.
No TAs and just me. It'll kill me. And so how do we find ways to maybe use technology to enable workflows so that instructors and TAs can actually get through this? How can we design it so that maybe there's peer assessment, maybe there's students who are assessing each other and providing feedback, and then the instructor provides the grades. So there's ways to do that. We have other tools. There's a platform called Gradescope that's being used strongly in the Faculty of Science, and it's actually an AI-based tool.
Okay.
So you take paper-based exams, you put them into the photocopier and scan them to the website. And it'll actually use AI to say question one was answered four different ways, in either multiple choice or short answer. The instructor gives four deep pieces of feedback, one for each of the four buckets, rather than marking, say, 300 papers.
Wow.
A bunch of times. They just provide the four pieces of feedback and it applies it to everything that is relevant. And so tools like that really are sort of workflow tools based on AI and other tools. And there's a bunch of other stuff it does. But are there ways that we can use tools can we, AI tools are expensive. Maybe it's just we hire more grad students, we hire more TAs. There are ways to do this necessarily than just giving money to a Silicon Valley startup.
Yeah. Okay. So GradeScope, that's a super interesting one. I'm going to have to check that out for my own marking, perhaps in the future. So I'm glad to have learned something today. Another kind of thread I wanted to pick up on that I found in your articles was you said that you think teaching and learning is going to remain fundamentally human and relational. So to bring this into the medical education space, we're already seeing so much AI permeating into medicine. We're seeing AI diagnostic tools and AI generated patient case scenarios and, you know, AI teaching assistants and AI, patient personas for people to work with. So with all this AI, which I think can be really helpful, but what do we do to preserve the elements of teaching that remain human, like mentoring and empathy? And how do we preserve that element in this AI world?
Yeah, I think that's the nut of this whole thing. And I think the closest analogy I've seen historically is probably, remember when desktop publishing first came out? You might not remember, that's before your time. Dang. When desktop publishing first came out, all of a sudden people could have fonts and clip art, and right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it unlocked all of this potential that people didn't have the literacy and the way of actually doing. And what we saw is everything was just hideous. They had to use every font. There was like 15 pieces of clip art and everything. And it was just gross. And that happened for a couple of years. And then as people built not just literacy, but fundamentals and capacity and having that lived experience of using that, they became much more literate in how they communicate. And I think we might see something similar with AI, where there's going to be sort of this uncanny valley that we're in. And that's why this feels so uncomfortable. We don't have that shared literacy yet, right, of how we do this. And I think as we build that, as we spend time, like you said, we're all first generation AI. As we all move forward together in that, we're going to have a better understanding. And I think it's going to become easier to have that understanding. And I think the biggest thing that I can see is we do it together. Find someone you trust and work through a question with them. Like, how would I approach it in this course? And whether it's, the person next door in the office next door, whether it's a trusted colleague across campus or somewhere else, this only really works by talking it through in your own examples.
Yeah. So picking up on support there, I mean, so support from each other. And so I always have a challenge for faculty at the end of one of these podcasts. So we're not at the end yet, but I'm going to throw the challenge out now is find your support system for AI. So I would love all our listeners go out there, find, and as Darcy said, whether it's the person in the office next door, or maybe it's someone at the Taylor Institute, or maybe it's someone at a different institution you work with, but let's all try to find who that AI support system is going to be for us so that we can have open conversations about, how would I do this? I'm struggling. Let's go back and forth with it. So that's my first challenge for all of our listeners is find that support system. But on the topic of support, so we need to support each other. We've talked about some supports at the institution. We've talked about a couple tools that are available. And then, we could get into the idea of academic integrity, which is a whole nother can of worms. But let's imagine that you're, sitting here in the medical school and you're thinking about policy. What should we prioritize as we think about what might be policy or guidelines for AI use?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean,
I know it's the worst question.
Yeah, we'll solve it easily in a 20-minute podcast. And I think it's a bit of a two-sided thing too, because people initially think, "What's the policy? Tell me what is allowed."
Mm-hmm. And could you just give me the rules?
Give me what's expected.
We like rules.
What am I supposed to do? Give me the answer, because this is change. And if the university, if an institution had come out and said, "These are the rules and follow it," there would be rebellion.
Yes.
Who are you to tell me this? You don't understand my case. So we need both sides of it. I think the university's approach so far has been, like, from the academic integrity point of view, from university policies, we have existing policies. We have information asset management policy, which third-party tools can use, what kinds of data can you put in them. Those policies exist. They aren't specific to AI. They're any third-party software. Mm-hmm. So uploading term papers to Turnitin, for instance, is not allowed under university policies. We don't have a Turnitin policy. We have, what can you do with this type of information?
Sure.
So how do we map it onto these policies already? We do have the start of that. There's a website, ai.ucalgary.ca, that maps to context for teaching and learning, for research, and for sort of the business of the university. How do we use it through our jobs? And those point out into the various portfolios to make sense of the existing policies. One of the things that get pointed to by that is, if AI is a thing, I think it is a thing, mm-hmm. And what are we supposed to do? What platform should we use? That it always comes back to that question. What's our AI platform? And at the University of Calgary, we have Microsoft Copilot as part of our license, but it's not what we're hearing from feedback, it's not what people really need. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a gap. What is a more robust AI platform or platforms ecosystem? What does this look like? And how is it integrated to the various tools that we already use? Do we want it integrated with Brightspace, D2L, the learning management system? There is AI already in Zoom. What's the policy around that? It's off by default. You have to go in as a host and enable it. And so the process around that, I think, so that's kind of the two sides of it. People want the answers because this is a change thing and it's, mm-hmm. it can be scary. Just tell us what I need to do. And how do we do it in a way that people have agency? And part of that is universities, institutions can provide infrastructure and supports. I think we have a gap on the platform side of it. I think as a university, we can figure that out. On the supports, we have our group in the Taylor Institute. We have libraries and cultural resources who are doing their Kaylee lab. We collaborate with them a lot. There's actually a workshop this afternoon with both of our groups working together on how to write prompts in AI for teaching mm-hmm. and learning. And so those collaborations, I think, are key. That's not capital P policy. That's like that's the embodiment of the policy, though. We work together. We sort of abide by the existing policies. And how do we identify platforms that are available?
So to end off, and this is also how you ended your article, is that you talked about, you know, that we've got to prepare for what's coming next because it's AI now, but, you know, 10 years from now, something else will come and disrupt what's going on in the educational space. So based on what you've observed in the past and based on what we're going through right now with Gen AI, what advice would you give to our educators and instructors about, you know, kind of building resilience or adaptability?
I think the biggest one is having that network. Everything that we do in through the TI and what I've seen successful projects across the university is exactly that. Having those networks and communities of people that you trust to help make sense of change as it happens. There was an author, Alvin Toffler, who wrote in the 70s a book called Future Shock. And at the time, he was lamenting on how much change is accelerating. Mm-hmm. Change has never happened as fast as it, and it only, and that was back in the 70s. Like, that's nothing. And I think it's still being extrapolated. So the change is going to keep happening. It's going to feel more urgent and more acceleration-y. It's going to feel faster. And the way we get through it is together. So find your networks, find your communities. Don't be scared of stuff, but also don't buy into the hype. Question things, think critically about things together. You're not in it alone.
So I threw out my challenge of like, find your network. Do you have a challenge that you'd want to throw out to people that's AI related?
Interesting. Yeah. So what challenge? So I guess the biggest challenge is just to get over the hurdle of try it. If you haven't tried AI and you've read about articles, you've seen it on the news or wherever you see, you know, your TikTok feeds are full of this, your social media is full of all AI is replacing our jobs and all that. I think the first thing I would recommend is if you haven't already, try AI. Go to the Copilot as part of our campus license and just ask it questions. Just spend say 10 minutes asking questions about an area that you know really well, because then you'll see how close it gets. But does it actually understand what you're getting mm-hmm. at? And it's really good to understand that in your own context, because you can see that. And then once you've got that experience, well, it gets maybe 90% of what my thing, and know that that's the same for every topic, right? It gets close, but not complete. Spend some time talking to it in what your own context, whatever your research is, whatever your course is, and just see what it comes up with.
Okay, listeners. So there's your two challenges for this week. So a challenge for me is to find your AI partner or your AI community to have these conversations with. And challenge from Darcy is to just get out there and try it if you haven't yet and ask AI some questions about something that you know very well so that you can start to understand the limitations. So thanks, listeners, for spending some time with us today. I really hope this conversation helped you see that this current AI moment, you know, it's not an isolated disruption. It's we've been having disruptions in education for a long time. There's a long pattern of tech change, and we've successfully navigated this before. But the key, as Darcy's emphasized to you today, is intentional design and preserving what makes teaching and learning fundamentally human by doing this together. See you next time. I hope these insights help you better understand how AI is shaping the future of medicine and your practice. If you have questions or suggestions for future topics, please reach out to us at ofd@ucalgary.ca. I'm Jocelyn Holodinsky, and we'll be back with more AI insights on our next episode of AI Rounds. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm Luigi Riscaldino, producer of AI Rounds. This podcast is brought to you by the Office of Faculty Development at the Cummings School of Medicine. For additional resources on AI and healthcare, visit our website. You can find the link in our show notes. Thanks for listening.